Hello and welcome to The Word, bringing you the good news of Jesus Christ every day from the Order of Preachers around the world. Today, from England, we hear from Father Ewan Marley, who is prior of the St. Michael's Priory, Blackfriars, Cambridge. Father Ewan's preaching is entitled, The God of Perfect Joy.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Some Sadducees who deny that the resurrection came to him, they put this question to him. Master, we have it from Moses in writing. A man's brother dies, leaving a wife but no child. The man must marry the widow to raise up children for his brother. Now there were seven brothers. The first married a wife and then died, leaving no children. The second married the widow, and he too died, leaving no children. With the third it was the same. None of the seven left any children. Last of all, the woman herself died. Now at the resurrection, when they rise again, whose wife will she be, since she had been married to all seven? Jesus said to them, "Is not the reason why you go wrong that you understand neither the scriptures nor the power of God? For when they rise to the dead, men and women do not marry. No, they are like the angels in heaven. Now about the dead rising again, have you never read in the book of Moses in the passage about the bush, that God spoke to him and said, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. He's God not of the dead, but of the living. You are very much mistaken." This gospel is following the first reading from the book of Tobit, where you see a story which is clearly the sort of story, if not the actual story, the Sadducees are thinking of. Tobit's story about the woman who has seven husbands, all killed by a demon. So they are part of Jewish tradition in telling the story. The Sadducees, in fact, seem to have died out. They were the group of Jews who didn't believe in the resurrection, but because they didn't believe in the resurrection, were rather political. To them, the only survival was the survival of the people. But they ask a question which is, in one sense, rather absurd, but in another sense, is close to the heart of things. It's close to the heart of the great question, how does this life fit in with the next? If you believe in another life, isn't it just a continuation of this life? They could, in fact, have asked a deeper question, which is, why would you think that this eternal life was desirable anyway? But the Sadducees, what matters is Israel, the society. They're part of it. As long as it continues, then they've fulfilled their function. Very dangerous belief, because it makes individuals rather unimportant. You might say, well, we're willing to die, we're not afraid of death, yes, but the other side of that is you don't have too many qualms about killing other people if it's for the greater good. But at least they're being logical. But the deep question of the next life is, what kind of life would it be that goes on forever? Might it not be rather boring and empty? Might you not say eventually, well, what else is there? There's a TV series which is a sort of comedy about philosophical ideas called The Good Life. It's on Netflix. I haven't seen it last series because I don't have Netflix at the moment, but I saw the first few. And in that, the question is raised, how can you be eternally happy if it's eternity? Won't you get bored? Doesn't it become empty and pointless? Some philosophers actually argue about this, even though they don't believe in a life after death, just because it's an interesting question. And suggest, well, what you could have is an eternal project, always planning something greater and better. And this project would be something that you would be engrossed in. That's not how Christ answers the question. Steady answers the question by including God. That might seem obvious, but many philosophers, and indeed the program The Good Life, only are interested in eternal life as something abstract, as a sort of idea on its own. Christ doesn't say there is another life, that we are immortal in some sense, that there will be a resurrection of our souls, because that's our nature. Rather, he says it's because God is with those who are died. It's a relationship with God. To understand eternal life but to ignore God is just impossible. God is eternal life. God is the point. So, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are with God. That's the point of eternal life. So important that when my father died, my mother asked me, "What do you think we should put on the gravestone?" I said, "Just put two words, with God." And that's what she did. Now she's buried there, so with God. We really shouldn't think of eternal life as in the abstract, as a theory. It's being with God. And that's the answer to why eternity is eternal happiness. To see God is to be happy. Because God is infinite, but more than infinite in any sense that we can imagine. When we think of infinity, we just think of something which is so big that it never ends. But God isn't like that. In fact, God's infinity transcends space, time, measurement, matter. These are things he's created, not him. That's why some of the medieval theologians said sometimes it's better to think of God as a tiny dot, a tiny point, because at least that way we're not thinking of God's greatness in terms of bigness, you know, just being very, very big. It's not what God is. God is transcending limitation. God is what he is. And it means that God is not just joyful, although that is a proper description of God, he is full of joy, but God is his own joy. There cannot be a vision of God which is not a joyful vision, because that's what he is, joyful and loving and true and perfect, infinitely perfect. Perfect in a way that can never be exhausted. Unending perfection, unending joy, unending power. So Christ says to the Father, "You should go wrong because you do not know the scriptures nor the power of God." He doesn't say you go wrong because you don't understand eternal life. It's not knowing the power of God. But God's power is his joy. It's what he is. And those who refuse God refuse joy itself. They refuse truth. They refuse reason. They refuse their own self-fulfillment, because God made us to be with him. And they refuse simply to be what they are. They have chosen an eternal contradiction, seeking happiness, but all the time destroying their happiness at the same time. Like the old catechism, why did God make me? To know him and love him in the next, to serve him in this world, to know him and to know him and love him in the next. He made us to be happy. It's infinite happiness, it's beyond our imagination. And we say, well, does that mean that we don't do anything in heaven, we just stare at this infinite happiness? Well, we do one very simple thing. We share that happiness. Share it with each other, share it with God. That sharing is continual and perfect and utterly fulfilling. Here on earth we try to share joys by symbols, presents, feast days, special family gatherings, by applause, praise for someone. or else just smiling and laughing. All symbolic works. But we do it because we're never quite sure that happiness will last. And we're never quite sure that other people believe that we are happy that they're happy. We have to be constantly reassuring each other that we share in their joy. But heaven we share, utterly perfect, in every way. We share without reservation, without doubt, with more than hope, more than certainty. There's no longer the possibility of not sharing that joy with each other, with God, forever and ever. And that is the power of the living God.